I would do anything for love. I would do anything. Why are you dressed up like this, Hans? That for Paul the Rooster? Paul the Rooster is coming? Who's Paul the Rooster? I said Paul the Rooster was coming? No, that can't be right. I don't even... Oh, wait. I said Adam was coming and we were going to talk about Paul Rooters. Paul Rooters, the Universal Genève Paul Rooter, the watch. Not Paul the Rooster. Anyway, who's Paul the Rooster? He's very famous on InstaHatch. Let me see. Wow. Well, yeah, I guess I guess I can understand why you're disappointed now. That's a damn sexy rooster, Paul the Rooster. Well, you know, you discover new things every day. Anyway, he's not coming. We're going to talk about Paul Rooters, Universal Genève with Adam from Denmark. So take those red lights out. We're not in Amsterdam in the red light district. And don't put any clothes on. Just take off the ones you have, which look just plain stupid. It's not a strippers club. Okay, now go out and let me prepare the podcast. Music. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Vintage Hen House on Fifth Fist Radio. I am Benoit, your host, Petite Seconds on Instagram. And I am very pleased today to have as a guest someone who I've been chatting to for a long time on Instagram. He is Adam from at Hamblar, H-A-M-B-L-A-R. And he's from Denmark. Hi, Adam. How are you?
Hi, Benoit. I'm good, thanks.
From Copenhagen, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I live in Copenhagen now, but I'm originally from Australia. So,
bit of a mix. You're an Australian?
Yeah.
I didn't know you were Australian.
Don't hold it against me.
No, well, you know, Fifth Fist Radio is mostly an Australian podcast channel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, most of the guys who do the podcast are in Australia or are Australian.
Yep.
So I did not know you were originally from Australia.
I'm just another one then.
Yeah.
Special.
Just another one. Wherever we go, there they are, the Australians.
Yeah, yeah.
Conquering the world.
Yeah.
So for those who don't know Adam, today's show will probably be focusing on Universal Genève and Paul Rooter watches, amongst probably many other things. Before we start, it's the traditional drinks and wrist checks. So drink checks. Adam, what are you drinking today?
I have a Negroni. Why not? It's the afternoon on a weekend, so.
Why not? I must say I have to admit I probably never tasted a Negroni. I've never drank one. It's not just because I've never had the occasion and there's nobody around me who like drinks Negronis. So
well, you don't need the occasion.
Yeah,
every day is an occasion. Well, it sounded a little bit like an alcoholic if I say that, but
no worries on that side. On my part, I've done my own cherry Coke with the Coca-Cola Zero. And some cherry liqueur with absinthe, which is a local liqueur with local cherries and absinthe. So it's like an alcoholic version of the Coke called a Cherry Coke.
Okay. Installed soon.
Yeah, and it's much nicer.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And on the wrist, I'm wearing my Dodan Type 21 military chronograph from the French Air Forces, which I've been wearing now for over a week. I'm doing the 1 week, one watch challenge. I'm wearing all of my watches, one after the other, for one whole week to see if I want to sell some, to see if they still please me. So the Dodan's been here for over a week, and it's a great watch. I really like the vintage chronographs. So that's on my side, and I'm curious to hear what you're wearing.
Well, you can probably guess briefly. Like it is a Polar Router. It's actually a Polar Router.
Polar Router,
yeah. So it's the first 6 months or something of production, but it's a gold case Polar Router, 18 karat gold. The reference is 10234-3. So this is the very first 18 karat run of Pole routers, basically, before they changed the spelling from Polar Router to Pole Router. So it started with a black dial, but it's turned this strange caramelly brown sort of color that
Tropical.
Tropical, yeah. I mean, you can call it that, I suppose. But yeah. So, but I've only had this on for a couple of hours, really, today. So, not quite a week.
That's a killer piece. It's a very, very rare piece because just first of all, finding a Pola router is not something very easy. Then finding an 18 karat gold one in good condition, which I probably guess yours is.
It's not bad. I mean, it's not perfect. None of my watches are perfect, but it's a very nice piece, I think. And I mean,
it's got the classical hands and dial, or does it have a special?
Yeah, it's a classical hands and dial, I guess. But it's so it's a gold Dauphine handset. It has the marker ring, that traditional marker ring pattern that you associate with most pole routers.
Mm-hmm.
But it has the straight lugs like the early 18 karat cases were. But I've only seen actually one other Polar router like with this same reference. I'm sure there's more, but I mean, like you said, Polar routers are quite hard to come by, as they are. But there was sort of something, it looks like there was over 100 of each sub reference made at a guess. But these seem to be even less, which is nice, because the other serial number, sorry, I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but the other serial number is something like 3 or 4 away from this serial number, so it's very close. So it kind of indicates there's not too many made.
I'm searching for it on your Instagram. It's got straight lugs,
yeah,
like Paul Reuter's
18 karat yellow gold case with a caramel brown sort of dial.
Yeah. Nearly leopard.
It's got a strange pattern.
And it's got indexes at 12, 3, 6, and, and 9, which is very odd because I guess they kind of left them out for the later ones.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a long time before I was born. So, I mean, I'm sure they had a reason in the design department.
I didn't even know that the first cases didn't have those lire lugs.
Yeah, they had them for the steel versions, but for the gold cap versions, they still had them. But when they were making the 18 carat case at the same time, this reference is what they were selling, along with the gold capped with the lire lugs and the steel cases with the lire lugs. They introduced the same lugs on 18 karat cases a little bit later when they introduced the micro rotor movement. So this still has the early bumper style with that big rotor that sits over the back of the movement bouncing around.
We are going to dig deep dive, I think.
Yeah, we won't spend an hour on one watch.
Yeah, but tell us, what's your personal story with watches? How did you get into collecting in the first place?
Probably about it's almost 10 years ago now, I guess. I think my first vintage watch was actually, it probably was a Pole router. I had a Speedmaster before then and Sea Dweller, and that's about it. But then, you know, everyone sort of seemed to hit that I want a vintage watch moment in their life around the same time, sort of in 2010, 2012, 2014. Everyone started to really, they just needed them. So my first pole router was around, I think it's 8 or 10 years ago, and it was one of my first vintage watches. But I guess I read an article on them maybe it was Herdinki or some other, as a watch blog website, you know, the usual SAS story. It sounded really cool. So I kind of started to hunt around for one. And eBay was pretty much where everyone went back then.
But you were collecting watches before that, though, no, right?
I wouldn't say collecting. I had watches. I wasn't really actively collecting them. I kind of just had them. I had them and I liked them. But this is sort of what kicked off the vintage collecting side of me. So, yeah, I mean, I read some blog post on them. and sort of started to hunt around for one, and I didn't really know much about them. No one really knew a whole lot, rather than pole routers are nice watches. That was sort of the peak of it. And all I knew was I really wanted a steel case and a black dial. That's all I knew. I had no idea there were any differences, that you could get 100 different types of pole router with a steel case and black dial.
It's funny, because when I started collecting vintage, it was a bit in the same way, but I read an article about Leap watches, French, which were made around my region, and I saw people selling them in the US, in different countries, and that's what started my my curiosity. And then when I strayed into the Universal Genève and Paul Router watches at one point, all the ones that everyone wanted, and me too, were the ones with the black dial. Yeah. So I don't know if it's the common Paul Router everyone wants to start with, but I have a couple of friends who also started or wanted one with a black dial. It's like kind of the tuxedo with the outer ring. And
I think that's kind of the like, when you say pole router, that's what everyone sort of thinks of. That's the first image that pops into their head. But I mean, when people ask me now about it, like, okay, can you help me find one? Which I've sort of started saying no to, because there's so many requests. But occasionally there's some people I help out. I'll say, sure, I'll try. What are you after? And they kind of say the same thing: steel case, black dial. And I kind of recognize, okay, I was at that point once. And I kind of direct them and say, well, you have to be a little more specific, because there's a lot of those. Like, you're kind of helping narrow it down a little. But yeah, I mean, it's nice that what I didn't have back then was a reference. And in my case, that my first pole router ended up being a complete disaster.
Yes.
Ooh. It was.
I think everyone that has started to collect or search for pole routers has at least one bad experience.
Yeah. To tell. But mine kind of kicked off the website, I suppose, in a way. That,
really?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I bought it it was on eBay after a few weeks of clicking around. But it was, everything about it was a disaster, really, but I didn't know it at the time. It wasn't cheap for the time, considering it was 8-10 years ago or something like that. But that eBay global shipping program had just started.
Okay.
Where it's like automatic, you pay import fees up front, and then it just arrives at your door. But it just started, and it was not straightforward whatsoever. I paid import fees, like ended up 30% on top of the sale price. And then when it arrived at the country, the local import department said, I have no idea what you're talking about. You still have to pay the 25% to 30%.
Oh, no.
So it ended up something like 60% on top of the auction closing price, well over $1,000 that I paid, considering how long ago that was and what prices they were sort of sitting at back then. It was had to be one of the most expensive steel pole routers ever sold on eBay. But hey, you know, I had my black dial steel pole router.
At least, which was still a disaster.
Yeah, because, you know, so I thought. But there was something about it. It didn't quite look the same as other online photos of the black dial steel pole routes. I couldn't really put my finger on it. And eventually I figured out it was just a really badly repainted dial. So not only was it hideously expensive, but it also had a shitty dial on it. So that was kind of like a mixture of sadness, anger at myself for being so stupid, and also the seller for not saying, being quite upfront of what had happened. Yeah, it kind of pushed into more curiosity, like, okay, how do I fix this?
So, but that's kind of very harsh, especially if it's your first vintage watch. Often we talk about the learning curve, but that's not a curve at all.
Yeah,
you just hit the wall straight
it's
on. Wall.
It's a cliff. It's a cliff, I think. Yeah. But it did put me off them, I think, for a time. It just went away in a cupboard, and didn't think about it. But and then went on to like looking at, okay, now I'm interested in Hoyas and like some IWC and all these sorts of things. Yeah. But I kind of eventually came back to it and noticed that there were these numbers on it, and kind of noticed there was other watches, other pole routers and Universal Geneva with numbers on them. And it's like, what do these all mean? And that grew into a spreadsheet trying to figure out what these numbers mean. And then lots of questions sort of from Instagram users and forums and all those sorts of things trying to say, okay, well, I've just got this watch. What does this mean? Is this a, what are these numbers and all that sort of thing? And I just kind of, it got a little bit excessive. So I asking about the spreadsheet. So I ended up basically just buying a domain name, making a logo, and then just dropping the spreadsheets on the website. And then kind of it snowballed from there.
So basically, yes, you bought your first vintage watch, which was a Paul Router,
yeah,
around 2014, 2015, that's what you said, or 2012?
Yeah, somewhere around then, 2012.
And then you went to collecting some other vintage pieces like Hoyer's and IWC, and then came back to the Paul Routers and started to have the idea of the website. And that was how long ago, roughly?
The website, actually, I mean, when I started, it wasn't to make a website at all. It was just for my own curiosity to try and fix this one disaster of a watch. But the website actually was first published 2 years ago now, I think.
Okay, yes. But you started working and doing some research because of this first bad buy.
Yeah.
And that was like years before the website.
Yeah, but it kind of got addictive. Like I'd figured out, okay, what mine is, but then there's all these other ones. Like, okay, why stop there? I can keep going and find what everything should be. So.
And why, except for the blog articles, do you think you stuck to Paul Routers? Is it living in Copenhagen with the SAS and all that around you? Did that help or not at all? Or have an influence?
To be honest, it sounds like it should have, but I don't think it did. Anywhere you live, it's a nice story, right? It's
true.
First commercial flights over the pole and all this sort of thing. It's really kind of an international story more than anything, but I'd say it's more of a coincidence that I'm in Copenhagen than anything.
Because some people maybe don't know the story, but basically the Paul Router was made by Universal Geneve in the 1950s. I think it's 1953 or 54.
Yeah, 54.
Because Universal Geneve were the official suppliers of the SAS, the Danish airline. And they did their first flight from Copenhagen to Los Angeles, flying over the pole, over the North Pole, in 1954. And Universal Geneve created the watch with Gerald Genta doing the design at that time with specific, anti-magnetic properties.
Yeah.
For the pilots and the crew and the crew members, I think.
Yes.
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the crew members maybe didn't need such exact timing, but the pilots did, apparently. So, but it kind of it wasn't the watch that made the flights possible, as far as I can tell. It was more the invention of the gyroscope that made this possible. But I think it was actually a very serious marketing move by Universal Geneve at the time.
At the time, it was true that watch advertisement and communication was mainly axed around big events like the Everest with the Smiths and the Explorer, a diving and stuff like that. And it falls completely into place that Universal Geneve at the time did this also for communication. And the watches more.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they didn't have Instagram influencers back then, so you know.
Yeah, lots of newspaper adverts though.
Yeah.
So concerning Paul Routers, we touched a bit about yours, which was one of the very first, which was called the Paul A Router with an A, and quickly about a year after they switched to an E for Paul Router. If you were to give us a brief description of the model, of how it evolved. Because I think you will be more suspicious.
How much time just,
we have? We have all the time we want, but just like a brief a historic evolution of the model.
Okay, well, I guess it's like you said, it started with the Polar Router that were in production for, I think, some time around 6 months, give or take, before they changed the spelling of the name. Why that is, I'm not entirely sure. It's there's some anecdotal evidence that they had problems with pronunciation in different countries, and it was more just a marketing move that it's easier to say. But I that could be wrong. I'm not sure.
That's just guesses.
Yeah, it's just guesses, really. But then I guess so. Their major moves was going from the bumper movement upgrading to the micro rotor.
Yeah. So the bumper movement is the one called the 138 SS.
Yeah. And I think they had that in the first the first run of pole routers as well.
Yeah, for like 1 year or so, maybe or more.
Sort of probably 2 years. Two years. All of these dates and numbers are sort of give or take, but we as time goes on, we get a better and better idea of how accurate we can be. So it was a couple of years they had them before they had introduced the micro rotor movement. The watch has got a little bit thinner, and also they started to have a small case and large case options, basically, and our different reference numbers. And they sort of ran with that model, and they added the date models and small changes in the logos that they were using. And then I guess in the mid-60s, they had a little change in the case. They went away from the lyre lugs into sort of a half lyre lug.
Yeah, because we can often see models with flat lugs or like a half lyre, like you say, and that was from the mid-60s roundabout?
I mean, it started... They started to introduce extra models like the Pole Router Jet and the Pole Router Genève. And they had different case shapes. The Jet had these straight, I don't know how to describe them, straight angled lugs.
And it was much thinner also.
It was much thinner, yeah. And that was late 50s, I think, they introduced these models. And then they sort of had all these models running together. Up until 65 or so, there was some logo changes, case changes, that sort of thing, but they still used essentially the same base micro rotor movement.
The classical Pole Router models with the lyre lugs or half lyre lugs, there was the Pole Router date, which was the same with the date function, and there were the jets which were thinner with angular lugs, and there were the Pole Router Genève, which had classic cases.
Yeah.
Like yours with just straight lugs.
Yeah.
That was the basis of the models.
Yeah, the majority of them, yeah. And then in 65 they started to... I mean, they ran with that same basic case shapes, dial types and all that for until around 65 when they started to really change things. And I guess the watch world was changing a lot around then as well. They'd already introduced the... Pole Router electric movement a couple of years before, and then everything sort of went on from there.
I like this Pole Router electric because the electric movements were done by Lip in France. And I have an electronic watch from Lip. It's part of the personal history where I live.
Yeah.
So I've seen a couple around where I am. I don't know if in Copenhagen you can find easier ways of like more Pole Routers because there's Denmark or not at all. When you search for them,
I haven't really found too many here. It may seem strange, but I think most of them are in the US or in Sweden. I guess at the time, maybe Denmark wasn't such the Danish people weren't really in a position to be buying like fancy dress watches. So I don't actually see that many in Denmark. It's also a small country, right? Population of around 5.5 million. There's only so many people you could have sold a Pole Router to. The US was a much bigger market, and also Sweden and Norway as well.
Basically the market for it is worldwide and it's a very tough market. When I started to collect Pole Routers, because I've had a few in my collection and I've both sold many, there wasn't your website at the time, so you kind of took info from where you could, and I guess you would have more info than me at the time because you were starting your spreadsheets and really digging deep. But it's very hard because the cases, the dials, the movements, they're easily changeable, swappable.
Yeah.
And you find a lot of Franken watches. Lots are more or less badly restored.
Yeah.
And it's a real jungle.
Yeah.
And I kind of gave up at one point because I'd had the models that I liked. I had a Paul Ruter Super, which was the dive version,
yeah.
which was nice. I had a couple of Paul Ruters, which were great, which I enjoyed, and I kind of moved on to something else. But I had the feeling after that, when I followed from a distance the market, that it was getting worse and worse. As the prices were getting higher and the people were looking more and more for Paul Ruters, the demand was increasing. Like 9 watches out of 10 sold online, be it by pros or by eBay, were just shit watches.
Yeah, I think it's more of a case that, I mean, before this whole vintage movement, watch movement started or gained so much traction, I guess, they weren't really, they were just watches, right? So something goes wrong or the dials got a problem, it just got repainted, like a lot of watches that weren't... they weren't Rolex or Patek or whatever. They weren't so cared for, I suppose. Even though they were quite expensive at the time when they were being released. But in sort of the 80s, 90s, no one, they weren't collectible. So that's, I guess, how they ended up at their current state. But, and as they got more and more known, people sort of picked them up from their drawers and went, oh, I've got one, without realizing that, yeah, you've got one. Got one, but technically.
Yeah, but the hands are wrong or the cases have been swapped or, yeah.
So, and I mean, there are a lot of pole routers out there. It's...
yes, tons.
They are easy to find, but it's what's getting harder is finding a really good one. Really nice condition is getting more difficult.
It's getting very tough and people are willing now to pay more and more for these.
Yeah.
Because they are rare. And what's interesting is that it's the same for a lot of vintage watch markets. I mean, if you buy vintage Rolex, it's the same problem. If you buy, I don't know, a vintage, I guess, a Patek Philippe, so you can find a lot of vintage Vacheron Constantin or the dress watches they made in gold in the 60s. There are lots of them, but there aren't that many that have the right movement, that are in good condition, that haven't had crown changes or anything. And it's the same problem, but I found it was even harder with the Paul Ruters because there were so many minor changes along the line that you never really knew if it was correct or not. And that's what's really interesting about when you started your website, because your website has a very extensive amount of data, very precise, with all the reference numbers, with lots of data, which means that you can, when you're searching for Paul Ruters, you can basically go to your website, put in the serial number, and check if it's really a black dial one or a white dial one or gold capped, and that is an absolutely, how do you say, a necessary tool now when you're collecting these watches.
And I think it gives one advantage over, say, vintage Patek or Vacheron collectors in that there are a lot of Paul routers out there, right? And if you do get one with, even with a replaced dial or something, it can be fixed. The dials are out there. You can find the right dial to fix or restore your watch. My first watch, I ended up finding a new old stock dial. It's exactly the correct one for it, about maybe a year or so ago in Finland, of all places.
Wow.
And now it's like, it's fantastic. It was such a good feeling to get the right dial on it and bin the hideous thing that was on there before. So the parts are out there, actually. With a little bit of patience, you can find them. If you have the same problem with a vintage Vacheron, good luck finding a dial for that.
Yeah, gosh.
I mean, That is the one advantage that we sort of have over these other vintage niches, I suppose.
But it still took you some time because yeah. you bought the watch like in 2012 and you only got the dial in 2019.
Yeah, so, okay.
So I mean, you had to be patient, I guess.
I didn't start searching for the dial in 2012. I had to build a website first, you know.
So. Yes. That's true. But it can only happen with these watches because there is your website. I don't know of any other watch brand or model that has such a nicely done website. Yeah. It's really nicely done because there's search tools. There's a lot. There's really everything. If someone wants to spend a lot of time searching, he can on your website. And if someone just needs to check an info, like is it a good movement on this watch or not, you can find it in 2 minutes. And what's even better, I find, and was a brilliant idea, is that not only there is your website, so we'll give the address of the website, which is universalgenevepaulreuter.com, if I'm correct.
Fairly straightforward, yeah.
Yes, very straightforward. And you also developed a phone application.
Yes, I mean, I take no credit for that, actually. I didn't do that at all. It's Andy from, I think, 1010 Timepieces is his Instagram name.
Yes.
He actually developed it entirely by himself.
All right, sir. But based on your website.
Yeah, so all I had to do was supply the data for him to build it. I mean, and that was, I've really done nothing, essentially nothing to make that up. It's all Andy.
I thought it was either you or a collaboration with someone.
Oh, yeah, I guess you could call it a collaboration, but it was a very one-sided collaboration. and he's still updating it and doing all this cool stuff.
Well, he will probably update it with your last website update, I guess.
Yeah, we have a plan.
But that's also great because when you're hunting vintage watches and you're doing watch fairs, well, which we can't do since COVID,
yeah,
but when I used to go to a lot of watch fairs and search for models, and you find a Paulreuter, and it's always the same questions. First of all, you look at all the details, see if it's the correct case, if the movement is correct, if the dial hasn't been repainted, if the hands hadn't been changed. So you start to look at everything, and then if you want to check if everything is legitimate, you just have to open your iPhone. Or Android or whatever, and open the Paulreuter app, and then search the serial number, and you have all the data about the watch. You can check if it's correct.
Yeah,
and that makes things so much easier. And you can do the same with the website on your browser. But basically, it's a tremendous tool for the buyer, and it's a killer tool for the seller, because there are the sellers that have adapted. And there are all those that haven't.
Yeah.
And they are still selling the bad ones.
Yeah. But I mean, the app, the way it updates, it's always slightly behind the site. So the most up-to-date information is always going to be on the site. The app has to push through updates through manually, but the website I'm updating pretty much daily. Maybe it's just one serial number that I change. Maybe it's an entire gallery that gets added or something, as well as the marketplace, that sort of thing.
So you work at it daily then?
I say pretty much daily, but I mean work, not so much. It might just be I catch a new serial number on a watch that's up for auction or something. And I just update the spreadsheet. But it's a lot of very minor changes and all that sort of thing.
It's taking you a lot of your time to do all this because, you know, all the research, all the things, all the data that people bring you, because I guess that some people send you stuff and kind of put it together. But it's still like a part-time job, no?
But it's fun, to be honest. I wouldn't do it if it wasn't fun.
Of course.
I mean, you don't make any money out of it. It takes time. It costs money, basically. So if it wasn't fun, I wouldn't do it.
That's kind of a gift to the community and to collectors, because as you say, you're not monetizing it and it's not the aim. You're just doing all this to help others, basically.
It's quite useful for myself as well, because there's only so much you can remember and then you have to start writing it down.
But you could like write it down all for yourself and then do a book and sell it €500, like the ones on Rolexes done by famous collectors or, you know, stuff like that. But you chose the other way of open sourcing it so that people can find the info.
I hadn't actually thought about that, but maybe I should turn it into a, take the website down, turn it into a book. Maybe that's a good idea.
We have a lot of podcasts at the moment on people who make books. There's been a recent one with one of the team, Roman, and there's a guy who made a book on any car watches, which apparently is really well. And I think it's good to have a book for your personal knowledge, and it's entertaining. But having a website the way yours is made, it's even more like a tool.
Yeah.
A tool for the collector, a tool for the watch hunter.
Yeah.
And that's what I find really, really cool.
I think the one thing it has over a book is that you can't update a book. I mean, you have to buy a new book, basically.
Yes.
Especially if you're talking about one serial change here. And now there's a new reference. So you're going to buy a whole new book just for that? It's just kind of going to be a little bit annoying, I think. And there's so much we don't know about. There's so many gaps to fill in pole routers, basically. I think we'd be lucky if we've found half of them and documented half of them.
That's still enormous compared to what exists for other models.
Yeah.
I've got an Explorer, a 1016 Explorer from the 60s. And there's a guy, I'll have to find him again, who made a website on the 1016. With serials, with stuff like that, but it's nowhere near as developed as your website. And what's good, like you said, is that you're keeping it alive because you keep updating it. And that's not the case for everyone. So while your website lives on and you update it, it gets more and more important and interesting.
Thank you. I'm glad you think that way.
No. I'm honestly very impressed. And so the website came out 2 years ago, and on the original website, there was the blog section, there was tech info, movement details, full reference tables with serial numbers, with each watch specifying the case material, the hands, the dial, the movement, everything. Photo galleries, accessories on catalogs, boxes, papers, etc., vintage ads, and patents. That was the original website, which has already a lot of information, and you did an update this week, a big update.
Yes.
So tell us more about it. How did that come about?
Well, I guess it partly came about because COVID and a lot of free time. it just kind of needed an update, basically. My girlfriend actually had been into like self-taught website design in the last sort of year, and I kind of it grew from there and started onto a little project that we did, but it probably took a lot more time than I expected, that's for sure. It's not a full-time thing, but probably over the last 6 months it's been building a lot of tiny little details going to designing every single little page and menu button and everything. It's I actually have a renewed respect for website designers after this last 6 months. But they actually do have a difficult job, despite what a lot of people think.
Yeah, and because there was a big aesthetics renewal. I know how would you say, like you change the aesthetics. It's a little bit more modern.
A little bit more professional looking, I'd hope.
Yes.
The first one was quite an amateur job, but I mean,
it was still good.
The point was just to have the information there that people could access.
Yes.
And it achieved that, I think. So the next step was sort of build on that, make it more user friendly, because there started to be so much information on there that it kind of became a little bit difficult to sift through. So we had to work on that a little. Especially for new collectors.
That's true. It was the old one was a bit austere. You say. It was getting a bit austere, but the new one is like all these modern sites with with the flowing pictures. It's really nice to navigate through. And there's a big new thing, which is the marketplace. So tell us a bit about that. How does it work? What's the idea behind that?
It's a PoleRouter specific marketplace. So it's the idea is to try and, I mean, collectors know this guy here has this sort of stuff. This guy here has parts for this movement, or this guy here found a stash of hands or what crowns or whatever. But if you're a one, nobody knows everyone basically. So the idea is to try and pull all these PoleRouter parts and PoleRouter watches and everything into one place. So if you need something for your watch, you know where to go. You don't have to sift through eBay for forever or Chrono 24 or all these other websites, forums and all that sort of thing. You've got a good chance of finding it in one place. It's not a marketplace in the same way that, you know, Chrono 24 and all that sort of thing is, but it's more a, it's a community. Basically, you contact, it's a way to contact the seller or contact the person who wants to buy something. It doesn't do anything beyond that. So you can list watches and parts for sale, and you just have basically end up with a contact button, and users can use that to contact you, and you two take it from there. The website doesn't deal with anything to do with that, doesn't handle any money whatsoever. That sounds like a nightmare to me, so I didn't want to get involved.
Yes, but still you contacted people selling parts or watches and told them that they could be on your marketplace, or do you...
It's open to everyone. You can just register, and if you have PoleRouter parts for sale, you can add a few pictures and say what it's for and post an ad up. Or if you're searching for something specific, like you need a crown for a certain watch, you find a picture of it, post it up and say, wanted to buy. You have to register on the site, of course.
Okay.
So people know how to contact you, and it sort of stops. It's maybe you have to register to stop spam, spam ads and everything. And to stop people posting non-PoleRouter stuff and all that sort of stuff.
Okay, and do you control what's happening on it? If someone's selling one with a badly redone or Franken PoleRouter?
I approve the posts, basically. That's all.
Okay.
So it stops spam, it stops bad advertisements, that sort of thing. So hopefully it ends up with a decent reputation for a place to find real stuff.
So basically the ads we can see on this marketplace have been kind of approved by you, or validated by you.
Well, I'm not taking any responsibility for them, but yeah.
Yeah, basically. Well, that's already a first big selection, because you can move away all the shit stuff which is everywhere.
Yeah. And try and narrow it down a little.
Yeah. And did you advertise on this, contacting people, or maybe on your Facebook group? Because I know that you have a very active Facebook page also on the PoleRouters.
Have I put any marketplace?
Because you know you just updated the website. There's a marketplace, but did you tell people that they could come and put their ad, or are you going to kind of contact?
I think hopefully it'll just sort of happen as it happens. There's no rush.
Okay.
Sort of build. There's 30 or something ads on there at the moment that people have dropped parts on for sale and watches. When it opened, there's quite a few that already sold. It was quite quick for a couple of people. So it seems to work.
I navigated through yesterday, and it had just opened, and there were already a lot of ads, and I was quite impressed. So that's why I was wondering if you had contacted people before to push them a bit.
I got a couple of people that I knew were selling or planning on selling some things. I said, "Hey, how about you drop them up here so people have something to buy when it opens up?" but even then, there's been some new ads coming out. Yesterday and today as well. So hopefully it's a place that people can come back, and maybe we'll set up some alert system, or we've already had some interesting suggestions to add filters and add these little functions and all that sort of thing. So it'll evolve into something even nicer, hopefully.
I find that's kind of interesting because, I mean, your website is a very specialized website on Paul Reuters uniquely, and you only just opened the marketplace 2 or 3 days ago, and it's already active.
Yeah.
So that must mean that you must have daily quite a regular amount of people on your website. I don't know if you have stats since opening. Is it something that works well?
It seems to be okay. I mean, it is. Poll routers are still a very niche collector market. It's not everyone who wants to buy a vintage watch knows what a poll router is. Since I think the afternoon it opened, we had something like 3,500 page views yesterday. So it was quite popular, quite a bit more than I'd expected, I think. So that's nice. It means people are interested, and it seems so far like a decent idea, and we see how it goes.
I can see that the website is getting known because in the last couple of years I had people contacting me for help on Paul Reuters because I've had many and I kind of give the help I can give, and now each time I just tell them, just look, go on the phone app or on the website, and now I'll say on the website because it's more up to date, and check the infos for yourself. It's very simple, and I've already oriented a couple of people who wanted to buy a watch and who were asking me for advice on the watch, and I said, look, just take the serial number, look it up on the website, see if all matches, yeah. And if it does, then you're good.
Yeah.
And basically, that's the only advice I have to give now.
Yeah.
Except maybe on very peculiar models, things you don't see often, when maybe I'll like say, just look, contact Adam, and ask him if you have a doubt once you've checked on the website. But I know of two people who have bought a Paul Reuter after checking your website to make sure that everything was legit. And that the watch was correct to what was described.
Yeah.
So
I think it's kind of, it's good to hear, but it's also important to remember that there's still a lot of poll routers that we haven't documented. So just because you have a watch that's not on the website doesn't mean it's not real and not correct. It's there's a lot that we haven't found. They're produced in very small numbers that just haven't popped up for us. And also with things like serial number ranges, the ranges that we publish are the ones that we've found so far. This isn't some definitive range that comes from some fantastic archive down in a basement in Geneva. This is just from what we've found so far, and we can validate ourselves, basically. So these ranges are changing all the time. But they're getting closer and closer to, I guess, what we can call the truth. The real ranges that actually exist. But I encourage people, if they do have something that doesn't seem quite right or something that isn't on the website, just send me a message and I'll do my best to help.
Yes, and also you are always looking for new stuff. I remember when you started the website, you asked me and I sent you the photos, the serial numbers of the watches I had. And you've done that with a lot of people, and you're still I guess you are still looking for all the stuff you can find. So, if I can give two counsels to people who want to get a little bit into the Paul Reuter adventure, is first do a little bit of homework, and it's very easy with Adam's website because it's very well made. If you're looking for a watch or if you want to check a watch, just look up the website, look at all the details, read the articles. Because they are very interesting. And secondly, if you have a Paul Reuter at home in your collection and you haven't contacted Adam and sent photos of it, just send him a message. He'll be very happy to put your photos on the website if they are interesting for the community and to update his website and to gain even more info to be even more precise.
Yeah, if there's an update for better photos, the photos on there are just photos that I've found. Google images, old auctions, all this sort of thing. So I don't really have control over how bad the photography is or how good. So I'm always interested in better photos, of nicer condition pieces, a lot of the time it's not possible to find an example with a nice photo, clear photo that has sometimes even the correct crown on it or something like that. So I have to use what I have, basically. So if you have something that, you know, it's better than what's in the gallery, send it along, and we'd love to update it.
Yeah, great. Have you expanded a little beyond Poruta's? I know you on the website there's a bit on the Poruta subs, on the Poruta super, but is that something you've been holding down for a bit and maybe you would have more time later? Or
I think it's one of those funny things that the easiest way to research or find out about these is to buy it, have it in your hands, and take it apart and see what's different. and I guess it's been easiest with what's most available. So the watches I get, I know most about them. But there's sort of a limit to that. And things like Polarata subs, they're much more expensive traditionally than Polarata dates, Polarata Geneva, that sort of thing. So that means I have very few of them. So that means I haven't taken many apart. And we don't know so much about them, or I don't know so much about them. But, I mean, all things take time. Eventually, I'm sure I'm going to get more. It's one of those addictive hobbies. I've never gone down in the number of pole routers in my collection. It's only ever gone up despite my best efforts. well, not my best efforts, but my best efforts according to what I tell my girlfriend. Hopefully she doesn't listen to podcasts.
Well, that brings us back to the collecting part, which is what I really like talking about. So what does your collection look like? Is it 100% Poruta? Are you a mono collector or is it totally different?
I used to be into Hoyas. I still am into Hoyas. I think they're fantastic watches. The Hoyas 60s, 70s, even 50s chronographs.
Yes.
But, you know, the Polaroids have definitely taken over in a big way. They're like trying to think of another better word than a weed, but they're really outnumbering everything else in a big way.
Is it a weed or just weed? Because both can work in the context.
yeah, maybe a little of both. But I'd say it's probably at the moment 70% poor routers or something.
The people like numbers, Adam. How many watches?
How many watches? Watches.
Don't be afraid of your girlfriend.
Over 100.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So serious collecting.
Everything. There's always a faster gun, right? Serious collecting, it's all relative. There's people,
yes, true.
People with 1,000 watches and some ridiculous amounts, but then, it's all relative.
But you see, I love doing these shows because each time the guy says I have 50, 80, 100 watches and I feel so much better with my friend.
Yeah.
So on all these watches, 70% are Poruta's uniquely?
Yeah, I'd say something like that. I mean, I don't sit there counting them every day. I think I have 4 Poruta's in the post on the way to me at the moment. And parts and all sorts of stuff. There's like the most used app on my phone is like the postal app with traffic numbers, I think. And you get that kind of weird feeling of I'm completely unfulfilled when you run out of tracking numbers. There's nothing on its way to me. I feel like I have to do something about that. So, but that's probably another someone else I have to talk to about that issue.
So you're another one of those, and I count them, I count myself in them, one of those furious eBay collectors, searchers.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
I have maxed out my eBay search, saved searches. I have maxed out. I think it's at 100 maximum you can do, or 150.
150 saved, eBay searches.
Saved searches.
Saved searches.
Updating constantly, yeah.
Oh. Next level.
Yeah.
This is next level. I love it. I remember spending so much time on eBay, so much time.
But it's still, even though I mean, people say, oh, it's so hard to find a good, you still find very nice watches, right? You just, it's kind of, you just have to be quick. You have to, and
you have to be patient and quick.
To be quick, you have to know what you're looking for. So you have to spend a lot of time to know what you're looking for. And things on, like for pole routers, you have to spend a lot of time looking and kind of less time buying at the start. And that's very, I understand that's very hard to do for especially people who are new to collecting specific watches. It's hard to have patience.
Yeah, that's exactly what I tell people. When I started, I was roaming eBay. I had, I don't know, maybe 50 saved searches. And you kind of put lots of watches in your favorites. Mine were always full. Not to buy, but just to see how it sells. Just see the prices, keep track, and you have to go on eBay every day and spend hours every day. I really remember I spent 2 or 3 years of my life every day on eBay, at least a couple of hours.
Yeah.
And that might seem crazy, but it's the only way to not just to buy stuff, but to get education.
Yeah.
Because you can't handle all those watches.
Mm.
But just seeing them on eBay with the photos, seeing for how much they go, seeing how the auctions work, you gain knowledge.
Yeah.
And that's how some people kind of came to me as a Paul Router expert at one time, because I've had a lot and I could tell major differences and things like that. Not as much as you now, but I still like to share this and to help all the people I could. But it does take a lot of time. I have eBay on the second page of my iPhone, and it's a challenge every day not to go on it, because I've stopped doing that.
Amateur. It's on the first page for me.
Yeah, but I have stopped doing that. Yeah. It was on my first page of the iPhone.
Yeah.
And I had the notifications, and I stopped because I had to put back this kind of watch collecting.
Yeah, maybe that's a good idea.
Well, no, that's I know I will get back to it. I know how it works. I know I would love to get back to it, but I don't have the time to do it properly, so I prefer not to do it than to do it just a bit.
Mm-hmm. I think it's only that kind of advice is kind of only something you can give in hindsight, right? It's very hard for people to take the advice, like have patience. That's almost impossible for someone to take. I mean, I remember starting collecting, that's everyone said, just relax, have patience, have a look, and it's impossible. Everyone seems to go through the same collecting phase, right?
Yes.
It starts with just buy everything, followed by the regret of the crap that you've bought, right? followed by the patience phase, and then you start to look for really nice pieces. I hope I'm in that last phase that that we've been talking about. But you know, you never know.
No, you are definitely there because of the experience, because of the time. The more time you spend on it, the more you gain experience, and the more precise you are, and you won't buy anything on top of your head.
But it still happens occasionally.
yes, but with a keen eye, I guess, yeah. With a more precise eye. But that's fun because I had to stop because it was too overwhelming for me, because I didn't specialize in just one type of watches. I had lots of things I like. There are too many things I like. So I had too many results and it got out of hand. And since I didn't want to specialize in something, which would have been the logical issue, like you did, I prefer to take it a little bit more easy, let things go, and enjoy different types of watches. And do you still search for Hoyers or IWCs? Is that still a thing you do in the background?
They're still in my eBay search terms, yes. But I'm much more patient with those, I guess we could say.
Yes.
I mean, I still have my Hoyers and I wear them and all that sort of thing. I love them. They're fantastic watches. But just pole routers are sort of taken over. It's that once you decide to sort of specialize, then I guess it's sort of a one-way street. There's no going back.
Well, that's a good thing for everyone because you're bringing a lot of help to all the ones that are searching for these watches. So great job on that. And any modern stuff? Any modern watches? Modern watchmaking? I don't even know. You're not a watchmaker, are you?
No, not at all. No. I've fixed my own pieces, but very sort of ham-fisted fixes. It's more of a replace parts until it works more than anything.
Okay.
But I mean, I kind of enjoy that as well. Maybe I can end up doing a very basic watchmaking course one day. But modern watches, I only have a couple. I mean, it sort of gets to that that time of the year in Copenhagen where they have this rain that never stops, very light rain that never stops until from between sort of November to March.
Really?
Yeah, so I just, that's when sort of modern watches come out, at least, because they're going to get wet and you just don't have to worry about them. I think from soon, I just switch to, I have a Sea Dweller.
A Rolex Sea Dweller, yes, yeah, okay.
What is it, 2005 or something like that, something around there.
Okay. I am rubbish at reference numbers.
16600.
Okay.
Or is it a 1660? I don't know.
Yeah, who cares? It's really not my thing, reference numbers.
Fantastic watch. I love it. And it's one of those watches that I'd never sell.
It's kind of your daily watch then?
Yeah.
Rolex Dweller.
Daily rain watch, I'd say.
A daily for November or December. Well, that's a fun fact.
November to March, yeah.
I've never been to Denmark, so I wouldn't know, but yeah.
I'd forget November to March.
Do you have a special name for that type of rain, maybe?
Maybe there's something in Danish, but I'm not sure. It's just it's one of those things you can go for a walk, but you kind of get wet without realizing you're getting wet.
Yeah. I can see that, yeah.
It's like being in a very cold sauna, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. But how does an Australian guy end up there? And how do you manage?
Because I manage. It's a nice place. I didn't come here for the weather, that's for sure.
Surely.
But I mean, it's the culture, the people are very nice. It's a very different way of living, different expectations and work and home life and all these sorts of things. I mean, even it's a social welfare state, so things like, without trashing, sounding like I'm some kind of...
No, cool.
Yeah, it's kind of nice to be in a country where everything seems to work, or at least work much better. You know, you pay a high level of tax, but you get a lot for it, I think.
But somehow that's what we all feel about Australia too. Because I don't know, maybe you grew up in Australia, then moved as a kid in Denmark, or I don't know how it went. But today Australia is seen as a refuge, like what you're describing, where things seem to work.
You haven't tried to catch a bus in Sydney, have you? Public transport's a bit of a mess in Sydney anyway, but I mean, that's another
issue. But it's the Australian way of life. The way we see it, Europeans, you know, it's Australia is kind of a place where I could certainly live. And I'm more of a Nordic European than a Southern one.
Yeah.
I like things organized too, you know, more of a Germanic. So I guess Denmark would be good for me, but some people prefer the more Italian way of doing things.
The Italian way, okay. I think I know what that means. But maybe it's just a case of the grass is always greener. So
yes, true. Okay. And so a Rolex Sea Dweller, and if we get back to watches, and you were saying one or two modern watches, so maybe you have another one up your sleeve?
I have a...
in your collection?
A Speedmaster Reduced, which doesn't sound very exciting, but it's more of a sentimental value. It's a gift from a very good friend a long time ago.
I like the Reduced.
Yeah, I mean, I have a small wrist as well, so it kind of suits pole routers. It also suits the Reduced Speedmaster Reduced size as well.
Yes.
So
that's your modern pieces for the rain. And do you follow any of the news, you know, the Rolex releases, stuff like that, or is it not really your kind of...
It's not really my kind of... I'm not really that into it. I mean, the same reason people go for vintage watches, they have have history, they have soul, they have something about them, right?
Yes, totally agree.
You don't have that with a modern watch. That even with the vintage re-releases and all that, it's not quite the same. Especially when you're talking about the prices. You know, you can buy a Speedmaster for this much, a brand new re-edition, or you could just buy the old one, the original vintage one, if you search and have a little patience, for pretty much the same price. Okay, maybe not in all cases, but in a lot of the case. So I kind of think it's not really marketed towards me anyway. Even though they're saying vintage reissue, I think most vintage collectors would, given the choice, the modern reissue versus the original old one, they're always going to take the old one.
Any vintage collector will choose the old one, of course.
Even if they can't wear it from November to March.
Maybe one day Universal Genève will spring back. I don't know what you know about the brand now and how it kind of went down in the 70s.
I mean, I think part of me hopes that they will, and part of me also hopes that they won't. Of course, the key is, if they do, how they execute it. It could be a complete disaster, or it could be fantastic. So I remain kind of, I guess, hesitant on anything like that happening. There's a few people that are sort of doing their own take on a reissue of Universal chronographs. There's Messina Lab, of course.
Yes.
Reissue came out recently.
Yes, I saw that they came out with a reissue. I must say, I didn't look deep into it. I don't even know what it was about, really.
It was
like a Big Eye chronograph or something like that.
So they did their own take on a modern reissue, I suppose you call it. I guess I'm not the right person to talk to about that, but I mean, that's kind of a case of vintage collectors were heavily critical, either positive or negative, about that sort of watch. But I'm not entirely sure that the people who are criticizing this were the market for it anyway. So, I mean, yeah, okay.
Yes.
It's kind of a weird, like, kind of hit that, okay, I know it's there, but I didn't pay too much attention to it, like yourself.
Yeah. What I know from Universal Genève is that when they sold the company at the time to a Chinese guy, this is all things that I've been told from someone which is more into watches even than me, that, and someone who is in Geneva, is that it was sold to a Chinese guy at the time who had several brands, I think. And when he died, he kind of gave the brand to one of his sons as a heritage. And the son in question had no interest at all in Universal Genève or in watches whatsoever. So he kind of let the thing die, and now it only exists in the Asian market as a modern brand that has nothing to do with the original one.
Yeah, I think they've tried a couple of in hindsight, again, it kind of looked like a bit of a half-hearted reissue attempt, which didn't really have the soul of the original pieces. But when they started doing this as well, Universal Genève as a vintage piece wasn't really that popular anyway. So if they tried it again, who knows? But the executions would be the most important part, I think.
Yes, but what I know is, well, what has come to me as information is that guy, that Chinese guy now, who is the son of the person who bought the company at the time when it went bankrupt, still has the brand, but doesn't want to sell it because, of course, he has been approached many times by groups of people who wanted to buy him a Universal a Genève and make it into something more of a heritage brand like we see now. And he always said no because it's a heritage from his dad.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I mean, I don't know a whole lot about it than it's
that's
Hong Kong,
what I
Hong
know.
Company, Stilux or whatever it's called.
But he's not selling it because it's personal to him in that way, as a family thing. But he's not making anything out of it because he doesn't really care. So it's kind of a very, very strange situation. I mean, it's a gold mine. if tomorrow this brand started again, like Longines, imagine a Richemont or Swatch buying the Universal Genève brand, they would probably make something out of it.
I mean, he still seems to be renewing, or at least the copyrights for a lot of the model names and all this sort of thing are still valid. So he still holds them.
Or maybe you follow that closely?
I've had a little look. so I guess they're being renewed at some point. There are still some names that are, I guess, available. They haven't been renewed, or they've been lost over the decades.
And they didn't, you didn't have any trouble with your domain name then, or with them?
Not yet. I mean, I'm not selling anything. It's just a purely educational sort of platform.
Yeah, but I mean, no one contacted you from them, or you didn't contact them or anything when you did the website?
No, I've not tried to contact them, and I've not had any contact back either. But I mean, it was just my own little project, so I wasn't trying to reignite the brand or make new watches or...
Yeah, of course. Well, you know, this was really a good insight, Adam. Thanks a lot for sharing all of this.
Yeah, no problems.
I know, or maybe you had something else to tell or specifics?
No, I think...
I think we've kind of done the Paul Reuter, given a good insight on those watches. If you're curious listening to this, just have a look at the website, do some research on the Paul Reuter watch. They are great watches. The movements are, we haven't talked much about the movements, but the micro rotor movements are beautiful movements, really, really, really nice.
Yeah, they're fantastic finishing on the back of them. I mean, it's kind of makes you wonder why they didn't have any kind of display case. It's just to think they made that kind of finishing just for the watchmakers to see. The people who were wearing them never saw this. And they're really beautifully finished movements.
The bridges have a nice shape too. Yeah. The micro rotor is well integrated.
Yeah, fantastic.
And it works well. I mean, once it's well regulated, it's kind of a workhorse movement too.
I'm not a watchmaker again, but in my experience, their parts are available, even if they're secondhand. It's very easy to get non-functioning movements running again, just replacing a few parts. The main issue seems to be the rotors themselves that wear out, either the stem post, or it depends what kind of rotor you have. But there's actually an article on the site about that, how to fix it or go about fixing them.
Oh, really?
But other than that, they seem fairly straightforward. I mean, I've pulled them apart and put them back together, and I'm a complete amateur. And they've still worked when I put them back together, so that's a good sign, right?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. That's true.
And if worst comes to worst, it's you can always, movements themselves are available, very easily available for a couple hundred euros, perfectly running.
I remember having spare movements too when I had many Paul Reuters, because just in case a part broke or something. But I never really had big issues with the movements because they are pretty sturdy, well made.
Yeah, I can't really comment on that, not being a watchmaker, but I like them. That's as much as I can say. They're good looking, they sound nice when they're on the wrist, and they seem to keep. When the watch has been serviced and everything, they keep really good time.
Awesome. Okay, I think we'll wrap this up. Instagram recommendations. Do you have someone you think is worth mentioning to follow?
Sure, I have a lot of them. I mean, where do we start? First of all, Andy has done the Pole Router app. Definitely,
of course,
following him at 10:10 timepieces. Like, so 1010 timepieces. Dandy Watchman, of course.
Of course, classic.
Yeah, he's.
I will stick to three because I'm going to get into trouble if you say too many. Normally, it's one. We can work to three. Okay. So, Dandy Watchman, 10:10 timepieces.
How about Uptime Watch? He does these lazy Sunday video series, right?
If you hadn't mentioned him, I would have mentioned him, and I think he's worth talking about.
He's actually really. I've just sent him a video that he's been editing for the last weeks on a Broad Arrow piece that I have, gold capped Broad Arrow. So with Broad Arrow hands, like the vintage, some vintage Omega Seamasters have. So that should be tomorrow. He releases that cool little video, but he does these every week.
Yeah, he is a very great guy. He does the Lazy Sunday video series.
Yes.
Which drop every Sunday, yep. Where it's basically a front side view of a watch and the hands turn and the bezels turn. And
yeah, he does all sorts of different things with movement, and he just makes these really cool little videos every week. Yeah. It's a new watch every week. So,
yeah, great videos. I think you'll have to come on the show someday to talk about that, because it's very, very cool stuff. And it's really, the lazy word is great, because you have to watch them with a lazy eye.
Yeah.
Like in a couch and just look at them and just be hypnotized.
It's kind of also a little bit ironic in the amount of work that he puts into these videos.
Well. Exactly. It is ironic because it's lazy, but he's definitely not lazy about them. Great quality videos. Great account to follow. That's Uptime Watch in one word. On my side, I'm just going to recommend one person because it's fun, because a few days ago he contacted me. He sent me a wrist shot of his Paul Router, which was the very first Universal Genève Paul Router that I bought. It was a gold capped time only one. Beautiful with great patina, and I've actually taken this piece to Australia when I was in holiday a few years back. And he recently sent me a photo, because he still has it. He's still wearing it, and I sold it to him maybe over 2 years ago. So his Instagram handle is FaceHalk16, so FaySHALK16. And he's got a very varied collection. He's a great guy, nice collector. And he has my very first Paul Router, which I hunted down on eBay, got for a bargain. And that's just great memory to me. And I'm very happy that he's enjoying it now, because it's a great watch. And I nearly regret selling it, like we all do with some pieces.
Yeah. So, although, as my my girlfriend's grandmother always said, you only regret your economies, right?
Yeah,
you only regret the things that you don't buy.
Is that a Danish?
No. She was English, so.
Okay.
She was also completely crazy, but that's beside the point.
But that is very, very true. I'm going to note that down. Thanks a lot for being there, Adam. It was really interesting talking to you.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, and for people listening, follow Fifth Wrist, Fifth Wrist Radio. Leave a review of your watch on the website. I don't know if you know the Fifth Wrist website, Adam. It's basically a community-based website where people leave a review of their watch. There's a limited number of characters, and you put a couple of photos on it. And it can be vintage, modern, whatever. But the aim is to have a kind of a website where the owners of the watches review their watch with the pros and cons. And if you ever have the time, do leave a review of a couple of Paul Routers. That could be really, really cool.
Yes, that would be very cool. I'll check it out.
And it's a very fun exercise too, because with the limited characters, you have to kind of choose what you say. And there are a lot of very fun reviews.
Like Twitter for wristwatches, is it?
Well, I think the aim is going to be like Rotten Tomatoes kind of thing.
Yeah, okay.
Because you rank the watch, you have wearability and value, etc., on a note of 0 to 100. So that gives an average. The aim is to have several reviews of different watches and of the same watches. But it's really mostly a community-based, so that people can share their thoughts on the watches they wear. If you have time, it would be great to have a couple of Paul Routers on there, because I don't think there are, or maybe one or two, but not many yet.
Sounds good.
Yeah, so fifthwrist.com. There's the podcast, of course, Fifth Wrist Radio on all the good podcast players. And follow Adam, of course, at Hamblar, HAMBLAR. Follow also Paul the Rooster on Instagram. And just to close the show, I have a traditional last question. Adam, you have four watches in the mail, but we're not counting them.
Yeah.
What is your next watch going to be? And you can answer that question whatever way you want.
Whoa, that is a tough question. Partly because I never know what it's going to be. It's always just what seems to appear. It would be nice, if you're talking a modern watch, it would be nice to have a Lange Darf. I've been sort of saving up for that for a long time. It's never really eventuated.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But that's kind of, that's a much bigger purchase than a pole router.
But that's a great project.
Yeah, something to look forward to. They weigh, they're platinum, so they weigh a ton in your hand. It's like walking around with a brick, pretty much. I'd say that's the next serious purchase that
is perfect
in my mind.
Great answer. Thanks a lot. And people around the world, stay on time.